It's the Metal Show with Gully and Joe, and this week we're not going to review an album. We're going to do a kind of interview. It's not a kind of, it's a fucking interview. It's Lee from Monstrosity, and they just brought out an album, and we're going to talk about that and lots of other different things. It was quite in depth, wasn't it, Joe? It was a fun one.
Yeah, there was, you know, a lot of static amongst Malevolent Creation fans. Obviously, when the band split, it all got a bit tragic. Phil was left, was the last man standing. We had Phil on the show around that time as well, when he explained what happened, and I know everyone had their own different point of view on it, and everyone had their side of the story. And he put together a brand new lineup, all completely new. No one wants the 13th album of their band to be a completely new lineup. I'm well aware of it. And the camp got split. I had a couple of debates, should we say, online. All I ever said was, I'm going to give it a fair hearing. Don't know what was wrong with that. Still don't. But lo and behold, the album's finally come out, and I think a lot of people are having their minds changed, and a lot of people that are actually giving it a chance have gone, look, it's a bit, you know, it's always odd when a band goes through this, but they're not the first band to have gone through it. I mean, Exodus of Shovelheaded Kill Machine is an album that comes to mind. Gogoroth, done it about three times now. Fucking hell, Black Sabbath done it. And
yeah, Machine Heads are about
Robbie Flynn and the Machine Heads.
Yeah, they're about to do it.
Yeah, it happens, man. Like, so as long as the material's good, and that's the thing. I've just given my opinion on the album now. I've reviewed it and whatnot. And what can you say?
There's albums that nearly make you crash your car and get done for speeding, and there's albums that don't, and this album's one of them. So I thought, whilst all the noise was going on and while it was dying down, it'd last to get the man in the seat and get his, it seems like no one spoke to him, you know. Phil's obviously been doing a lot of press, so I gave him a hit him up on Facebook. And well, I think what happened was he liked, someone shared one of the review of the album and he liked it, and I kind of went from there.
Yeah. Well, he reached out after the interview as well.
Man.
Top bloke.
Yeah,
really
interview
nice bloke.
Went really well.
Had a good conversation.
It went from Malevolent Creation to just, we just ended up talking about stuff. That's always the best interviews, is when you forget how long you've been on the phone for, and you forget you're doing an interview. You know, it just becomes a talk.
And
yeah, well, that's what we always try and strive ourselves.
He said
on.
He really had fun, and he'd like to come back on. So we're going to talk about maybe doing an album or.
Yes, well, we have the album he wants to do. I'll message you that as well, because he messaged again to remind me. But I don't think there's much more to say. Without further ado, here's the interview, and we'll be back to say bye at the end.
It's the Metal Show with Gully and Joe, and we are joined by Lee Wallenschlager of Malevolent Creation. Lee, how's it going?
Good, man. What's up?
So this new album has finally dropped. It's been a bit of a path leading up to this album, but what's the reception been like? What has things? How long has it been out? For about a month now, coming up to a month. How's the first month been?
Yeah, just under a month. Yeah, it's been going good, man. For the first time in Malevolent Creation history, we hit the German charts. It's gone pretty well. A lot of people were a bit skeptical about the new lineup, but I think we've turned a lot of heads. It's been going well.
So how did you get involved with the band in the first place? Take you back, it's like a couple of years now. How did it all come about? Because obviously there's big shoes to fill, and everyone knows that. But how did it all come about?
It was probably about June of 2017, I noticed that Malevolent Creation was being quiet. You weren't hearing much news from them, and then I went on their Facebook page, and there was nothing new. So I thought, okay, well, they're probably just going through a quiet patch. And then probably about 2 months later, I thought I'd look again, and then I saw Phil was looking for a new vocalist, and His main request was to film yourself vocaling over old Malevolent Creation tracks. And I thought to myself, man, I'm all the way in South Africa. He's not going to choose me, so I'm not going to go through all of that schlep. and I just sent him some of my own music. And, a couple of hours passed, and he emailed me back, and he said, listen, dude, let's fucking do this. It was really that easy. He loved what I was doing, and he loved the way I sounded, so he chose me.
Let's go back a little bit more, because what was you doing leading up to that? Because you was based in the UK for a little while, was that right? When you first joined the band, and there was that first photo, I saw you had the Throne of Nails t-shirt. You were involved with them for a little bit, but...
Yeah, I was involved with them in their demo days. That was, I think, in 98 or 99. I'm very hazy on that date, but it's around 98, 99 that I was playing with them. And then I came back to South Africa. And then probably about 2 years later, I went back to England. Then I came back to South Africa, and then in 2005 I think I went over to England again, and London is like my second home, so
that's unfortunate, because we live there too. It's you either love it or you hate it, I think, with London, and I hate it, but at the same time, there's parts of London that, like, the music scene is vibrant, and you can find any band that you're into will come to London at some stage, and that's one thing that could be said for the city.
Because not many bands tour South Africa, so I took you take advantage of it, watching all the bands, and so I went to as many shows as possible. But then after a while, you take it for granted. You tell yourself, oh, well, I'll just see them next time.
It happens.
Yeah, you do get very spoiled in a place like that, because bands are playing there all the time. And then I moved back to South Africa in 2008, or was it 2009? I think just 2009. And then I started kicking myself in the balls for not going to all the shows, because there's no bands playing in South Africa. it's terrible. This place sucks.
It's definitely like that, because, you know, the thing is, though, even if you wanted to go to every show of every band you liked, there just isn't enough time, and there definitely isn't enough money, I think, with London. I'm always kicking myself, because I'm really big fan of Slayer. I actually said I'd go to another gig with my friends, and I promised to go with him. Not my type of music, but I'm a really big Slayer fan. And Joe DeCoho said, do you want to come to Slayer last gig, free ticket? And I missed that, and I kicked myself for that. It's just one of them things. You've got to make the time, and you've got to have the money. London can be quite expensive, especially when you like live music.
Free.
Well, I wasn't paying for it.
No, it wasn't my ticket anyway. But let's get into the album then. So let's go slightly back to the beginning. Obviously, the split with the band happened. You stepped up. The new lineup was announced. You had the photo come out, and then there was a little bit of confusion. And Phil was on the podcast at the time, and he kind of said, like, I may have done the wrong thing by releasing that demo as a Malevolent Creations song, because it was actually one of your songs.
Yeah.
And they said, I really just wanted to give an idea of where we were going more than anything else.
It was pretty much just an introduction to the new vocalist, pretty much.
Yeah. And with Brett dying, that upped the ante even more. It was... I've just done liner notes for a reissue of The Wheels of Kill, and I was talking to Kyle about it. And he just said, look, I emphasized with the guy, because I was in his position once. I had to, I was the new guy. He said, I'm pretty confident. He went, once he gets those first couple of shows out of the way, once the album drops, he'll take it in his stride. He went, just like I did. And eventually people came around, and it's looking that way now. A lot of people have had to go, fair enough.
A lot of people have turned around. obviously you've got your diehard Brett fans, and that will never support me, but that's just how it goes. I can imagine that's how it was when Jay took over on vocals on Eternal. And as you said, look, when Carl took over, it's the same thing. The people are either going to hate you or they're going to love you, and sometimes it's a middle ground. But it's difficult to say. Because
I think it's just so funny nowadays because you have people reviewing movies now based on a trailer. And people release, you know, just a press release of what's going to happen with a band, and everyone's already given their opinion. And can you not just listen to it first? How about we just hear it? Everyone was sort of making their mind up one way or another. All I ever said at the time was, let's hear it. But wait for the new album to be in your hands and on your stereo before you make a judgment.
And, it's difficult. It's difficult to actually do that, though, at times. If you're a diehard fan of a certain band member in a band, and I've been guilty of it too, that I've like, oh, I can't listen to the new stuff, and then, you know, I've given myself a slap around the head, I've actually made the effort to listen, and I've been quite surprised. And I think a lot of people are guilty of that. If you've been into someone for so long, then yes, I can see why, but to not give yourself the opportunity to listen to it is doing yourself a disservice as well, I think.
It's just being a bit silly, because It's like when George Corpse Grinder took over on Cannibal Corpse. I was the biggest Chris Barnes fan in the world back then, and when I heard that there was a new vocalist, I was like, oh shit, this is gonna suck. And I think it was the best move that they ever made. He has become the Cannibal Corpse sound. And as you said, people are doing themselves a disservice if they're not going to give it a shot. All you have to do is switch it off.
Yeah, ironically, ironically, the George is doing a better job than the old singer is with his music, because I prefer the new Cannibal Corpse than the other stuff that the cover band was album.
He's been in the band since 1995, and he's still the new singer. He's done like 10 albums with them. the new guy.
And they seem to be getting more fans as well. The newer Cannibal Corpse stuff. You see people wearing the t-shirt again, and we've said this to a few people when we spoke to them. There's definitely a genre. This particular genre is in resurgence, and there's new bands coming, and the old bands are putting out some fucking solid albums, and that's the case with this album. Like I would say to anyone, have a listen to it and check it out, because there's some powerful shit going on, and I'm one way with death metal. There has to be a purpose. You can't stand there just going cunt bitch and fucking screaming fucking this, that, and the other for no reason. There has to be purpose, and there has to be, you know, attention to detail. And there's definitely this with the new Malevolence album. I really enjoyed it. I've listened to it a few times before we were doing the interview, and I have to say it's quite enjoyable.
Thanks a lot, man. Yeah, that's really cool. Thanks, man.
One thing that struck me when I got the album, when my copy finally arrived in the post, and I got it on release day, and I'm flicking through the book, and Phil has wrote the music for two songs and co-wrote one other, and the rest of the album is written by yourself. That really struck me. It's like, wow, like, you know, the new guy on board, and he's just done pretty much about 80% of the new album. How did that come about, and what was really the process of when it came to writing the album? Did Phil just really like what you wrote and just went, do you know what, man, I'm just going to...
The thing is, I live in South Africa. Our base is Josh and Phil. They live in Florida, and so we wrote the album via file sharing, and which is something completely out of what Phil is used to.
He's in Florida. He's always got, there's so many musicians around there. He's probably used to rehearsing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Jamming. Exactly. He, I'm not down talking the guy at all by saying this, but he doesn't know how to like record himself on a computer or program a drum machine, because he's always had people to record him and play drums for him. So writing this album for him was a completely new task. So what we did was he went over to our bassist place and he recorded some riffs and he put some stuff together. And they live about 45 minutes apart. So it's not easy for Phil to go over to Josh's place all the time. So it became a bit difficult, and through that time, I was writing every single night. It's like I've said in a few interviews, probably for about 6 months during the writing process, I think I took off two nights. I was writing music every single night. I think I have about 100 songs written. Yeah,
that's
a shit. Yeah, I have a shitload of music. But the thing is, I've been writing music with a drum machine for years and years and years. So writing music at home is, I write very fast. So even when I'm practicing, I have a recording app open so that I can just record anything at a whim. So that if I have something new, I just record it. And then when I've recorded, I'll just put drums to it and I'll see how it sounds. And if I like it, I'll just carry on and I'll finish the song in a night or 2 days or something. I write music very fast.
I think technology brings everyone together. That's that. We've spoken to bands where they live on other sides of the planet, and it's amazing that how these things come together. And it's not as difficult as people may think either. It's just a case of sending a file. If you all use the same program, sending in a file, mixing it together, and see what happens. It's really cool.
Yeah, no, I like it. Phil definitely doesn't because. He has got like 100 songs written as well, but all of the stuff is just recorded on his phone. So he'll hit record on his phone, and he's got like 100 songs written. But there was just no chance for us to put all that stuff together that was on his phone to put that through into songs. There was just no time to do that. So. It must have been a very frustrating process for Phil, because obviously he's been the majority songwriter from the beginning.
Yeah, this is what struck me with it, because when I was looking at it, I said this in my review as well, because I was just looking for the book, and it wasn't even something I was taking notice of. It was just something that I just noticed. And I said, this is like Kerry King getting a whole new lineup for Slayer. But with that being said, and I think this is the best compliment I can give you, is it feels like a Malevolent Creation album. It really does. You can listen, you can stick this on your playlist, just put it in with the rest of your albums and play the songs on the whole catalogue on random, and the songs will fit in. You know, it just blends wonderfully.
There is a reason for that, because... The way I always used to write was more like Morbid Angel Immolation style music, style death metal, and so the first month and a half to 2 months of writing music, I would send music to Phil and everybody else, and they're all like, "Man, that sounds like Morbid Angel," and then they'd say the whole time, "It sounds like Morbid Angel." And then I'd have to revisit all the old albums. I know them so well because I've been listening to them all life, but I had to listen to how they wrote the music. And I had to change my writing style completely.
You were in the malevolent mode, shall we say?
Yeah. So at this point in time, the malevolent style is now how I write music. I can switch between styles, but I don't know, just the like my main songwriting style at the moment would be for Malevolent, because it's been ingrained into all those nights of just playing and playing. I would play for like 6 hours every night, like I said, for about 6 months. And for like those 4 months, it was really in the Malevolent mode.
I imagine that's like muscle memory, though, because it's kind of, you're in that zone and you've been doing that for like solid 6 months. You got the next time you pick up a guitar or pick up a microphone, you're just going to be doing that, and that can be a good thing, especially now you're fronting the band. You're kind of in the zone, and that's where you should be.
Yeah, and the thing with the vocals as well is, I've seen one or two reviews, actually more, probably like two or three reviews, where the reviewer said that I'm trying to imitate Brett. And I, for the life of me, I can't see how
absolutely
they can come
not
to that conclusion.
No, I wouldn't think that at all. You've got a different style to Brett. Brett has got a raspy scream, while you've got a bass roar. So you're more in the league of Kyle or Jay, but
I would say maybe a mix between the two.
Yeah, mix. That's what I mean. Yeah. And you'd be. Go ahead. Sorry.
I never tried to imitate anybody. I just did what I do, and it came out that way. And I've maybe in my, like when I was a teenager, I always used to try imitate Chris Barnes and try to go deeper than him. But obviously, as you grow older, you learn your own style, and that's what I did. I did what I do, and it came out that way. I'm not trying to sound
even,
like anybody.
Even Chris Barnes.
I've been speaking.
Even Chris Barnes can't do Chris Barnes now, though. That's the thing.
I know.
We've had Chris on the show as well, and he's a lot of fun.
He loves his pot.
he recorded a cool intro, though, didn't he? He's like, watch out for these sick psychos. But
we've had an intro or two off him.
He's a good
when we
guy,
on the
Chris.
Radio.
I like him. He's a character. But especially with what's happened in, you know, you'd be fucking stupid to do that. And I've been talking to a lot of hardcore Malevolent friends, and I'm part of a fan group on Facebook, and no one, I've not heard anyone say that. So, I think a lot of people have been very, very skeptical's not quite the word. They've just been a bit anxious, a bit like, oh God, what's going to happen here? And I just went, look, I went, I've, this guy obviously writes full songs. I said, you've got the bass player from Solstice and Thrash or Die. You've got the drummer. I'm just going to look up his name quickly. Phil Kinsella from Drums, who is in Narcotic Wastelands. That last album, the drums on that was fucking phenomenal. Like, they could take off a helicopter. I said, so went up in place. I went, whether it deserves to have that logo on the front cover or not, you can debate that later, but there's no way these four guys aren't going to do a good death metal album. So anyway, we're past that now. So how was it recording the album? And you got Josh recorded the album as well, I believe. And Dan Swano mixed and mastered it.
Yeah.
Did you go to Florida and did you meet up and record together?
Yeah.
Or did,
yeah.
Tell us about that.
It was a difficult recording process. I'll put it to you that way. We had an engineer starting with us, and things went very sour. And I don't even know if I'm allowed to speak about this, but I'm speaking about it anyway. He got fired and Josh had to take over. So, okay. It was quite a difficult process, this recording. You always hear of bands that they say, like, yeah, we've had this album was a horror and this album was a horror to record. And I think we've just had ours because it wasn't. Yeah,
it's better to get it out the way at the beginning than having every album a horror. I think you've done your penance now. You might be all right from here on in.
I wouldn't worry about so much what you can and can't say as well. As I say, we've had Phil on the show, and he certainly didn't worry about what he was allowed to say or not.
Yeah, he did not give a fuck. To be fair, so where do you come from musically? What type of music are you into? And is there anything that you're listening to at the moment that you would recommend to our listeners?
I predominantly listen to death metal, but I've got a tattoo business as well, and obviously
I can't
listen
to death.
I can't listen to death metal in my studio the whole time unless I know that it's going to be like a metal type of client or something. So if I'm listening to death metal, it's at night. But like I'll listen to like more like hard rock type of stuff during the day. And I've been spinning the new Satan album probably for the past, since it came out. Fuck it, it's so fucking good. I don't know why I like that album.
I do like a bit of new wave. I say new wave, all the bands are about 40 years old now. The vocals for Satan are quite... But saying that, I really like Hell. But have you heard Haunt as well? Do you like them?
I don't know them.
Check out Haunt. See what you think about them. They got that... One way I'm thinking this is fucking really good, but then another part of me thinks, yeah, but I've already got Angel Witch on CD. That's But if you like that style, yeah, you might like Haunt.
Yeah.
But yeah, a lot of people have been talking about Satan's new album.
Yeah, I'm loving that album. To be honest, I'd never heard of them before. When I saw them popping up on, I think it was on Blabbermouth that I saw them first. I thought it was going to be like a Ghost rip-off band or something, and then I saw about their history and how old they really are.
It's yeah, like, I think wow. did Metallica open for them back in the day, something like that?
I think everybody, Elvis opened for them. They're so old.
Yeah,
yeah. It was the dinosaurs like that. Opened up for them. No, I think it was them that passed on Metallica's demo tape, which led to Metallica being signed, something like that. Okay. I think Lars Ulrich was a big Satan fan back in the day, and he gave him a tape, and I think it was them that passed the tape on, which led to something along those lines. Someone will be listening to this will correct me and tell me what a dickhead I am, but I'm sure it's something along those lines, definitely. They played a part in Metallica's. I bet they're really happy about that, too.
Yeah, no, I don't know, but yeah, so like at work I've been listening to that. Even if I got a 4-hour client, my client will be like, man, we've been listening to this album the whole day. I'm like, well, I don't care. It kicks ass.
What sort of style do you specialize in tattooing?
Black and gray. Black and grey, anything really, but the stuff I enjoy the most is like more dark art, black and grey, and not that I get to do it that much in this conservative town that I live in, but it's probably the style that I enjoy the most. I like doing a bit of colour every now and then, like a really nice elaborate full colour piece, but like I said, I live in a very conservative town, so it's only every now and then I get to do a really, really fun piece.
My where I go, I'm heavily tattooed myself, and I've got my guy does Japanese, and he has about six or so artists at a time. So when you walk in, if you want black and shading, or you want Japanese, or you want something else, they kind of assign you to the artist that suits you best. Is that what your place is like?
No. My town's too small for that. You wouldn't say it because I think the population here is, 200,000, if I'm not wrong. But
really?
It's still considered a small town. But Because, like I said, the town is so conservative, so it's not as if we got like thousands and thousands of people coming for tattoos. Don't get me wrong, business is really good, but it's not as if I'm doing back pieces every fucking day.
Yeah, no, my uncle's a tattooist as well, but he's old school. He's approaching. He's probably in his 60s now, and he said, "I mean, yeah. I don't get this whole I have this style or that style." I said, "Back when I was young, you did what when a guy walked in and he told you what he wanted and you did it, and that was that."
Yeah.
If the guy wanted a dragon, and then the next guy wanted a British bulldog, and the other one wanted a heart with his mother's name on it, whatever.
Exactly.
You did what the guy asked for.
Yeah,
it takes all sorts though, really, because my other half got she likes bacon. She makes cakes for a living, and she's literally got a bacon related tattoo on her arm. And do you know what? It's surprising how many people get stuff like that on them. I've got tattoos, but I never expected her to. And lo and behold, the past month she got one. So yeah, it's that type of thing to get now. I know it seems to become more fashionable of late, especially in London. It seems to be a strong call for tattooists and tattoos in general.
Yeah, there's so many shops in London. That's the thing. You've got so much to choose from there. In my town, I think there's probably two respectable places to go to, and then there's another five other places to go to that are absolute crap. This place is terrible. I can't stress how much I hate this place.
Yeah, I just thought, is there any songs you want us to play? Born of Pain and Knife at Hand are two favourites of mine, but Mandatory Butchery is a fucking savage song. What songs would you want to be? What do you want to add?
My favorite one off the album is The Beast Awakened, probably. I think that's my favorite one off the album.
I wanted to ask about the artwork as well, because it kind of carries on from Ten Commandments and what was the other one? The one that Eric Rutan produced. Invidious Dominion. And it's to me, it's like it's the mask. It's like the face opens up on this one.
Yeah.
Is that kind of what they were going for? Or did you just?
Well, we told German that we German Latorius that we just wanted like a beast type of demon type of thing, because the album was titled The 13th Beast.
Yeah.
So we just gave him the idea, and he just ran with it. Man, there's so many people that are like, oh yeah, the album's good, but the artwork sucks. It's like, oh fuck, man, just listen to the music. Who cares about the artwork? It's like you get these black metal bands that have got like a photo of like a lighter or something.
Nah, man, I think it looks cool.
Yeah, and I love it too. And you get these black metal bands that have got like a photo of like a bottle or something, and they use that as the album cover, and everybody's like, whoa, cool album cover. It's like, oh. And now you're hating on our stuff? So, I don't get it.
Black metal, man. Fucking hell. Yeah.
I'm not a fan of some of that myself, to be fair, but you should I was always told never to judge a fucking book by its cover. Read what's in the fucking middle, listen to the fucking music, don't be stupid. Really?
Don't get me wrong, because I love my black metal, but so some of the album covers are just so lame. It's like a black and white photo of something, and
my uncle, he likes a drink, and this is a funny story that's relatable to it, and he likes taking photos when he's totally drunk and sending me them on fucking Facebook Messenger, and some of them could be a fucking black metal album. He's taking pictures of his slippers, he's taking pictures of the curtains because it looks weird because he's stoned and drunk, and he sends them to me for some reason, and some of them remind me of them fucking album covers you're on about, so I can relate. It's like, what the fuck is this? It's silly. I think there's less onus on art as well, which I like art on an album that's a bit of thought being put into it, and rather than someone just taking a picture of something random, someone actually taking out a pen, a pencil, a paintbrush, or even just doing it digitally and taking the time. There's an art there has to be something to it rather than just bollocks. I totally agree with that.
He gave us the artwork that we wanted, so at the end of the day, who gives a fuck? Because it's the same as the music. We wrote the music that we're happy with, and we got the album cover that we're happy with. So if people like it, they like it. If they don't like it, well, we're not going to put out something just because somebody else is going to like it. We have to like it first. And maybe it sounds like I'm being an arsehole by saying that, but it's not meant that way. As an artist, you got to enjoy what you do first, because the thing is, like, if we're going to be playing these songs live, we can't be thinking the back of our heads like, oh man, I don't like playing this music. You got to enjoy it. You got to enjoy it as the artist. And yeah, you can't always go down that route of doing what other people want. I'm not going to be a fucking Bring Me the Horizon that's doing fucking Justin Bieber music now. Jesus, I don't know what the fuck.
Well, if you're going through the motions, people pick up on it, man. You can always tell band members who have got a fucking problem with the music they're playing. The flow isn't there. The energy, the aggression is all gone. You can always fucking tell. I think being real to yourself first is important. And if people like it, cool. Not everyone's going to like your shit. Music is like Marmite for a lot of people. So fucking, I would say.
No, because if you take a band like, specifically like a band like Metallica, they were into heavy music as youngsters. I can imagine they all grew out of listening to heavy music. Maybe they still do listen to a bit of heavy music, but that's not where their heart is anymore. And then they brought out the Load Reload era. And at the time, I hated it. But actually, if I listen to it now, I actually enjoy it. But Maybe it's because I know that they were writing music that they actually enjoyed. And now you listen to their later stuff and it sounds forced. It doesn't
yeah,
sound...
Yeah, I agree with
yeah,
you.
Yeah. It sounds so forced because like they're trying to be all metal again, but it sounds plastic. It doesn't sound authentic.
You can imagine James Hetfield just going settling down after the end of every gig with his pipe and his slippers, thinking about what he's going to shoot next with his rifle. He's not into the music at all. You kind of can tell, and you're right with that one. You've nailed
yeah,
it.
To me, the way I see it is, to them, it's a job. That's all it is. It's a very well paying job, and they're just going with the motions. But I could be wrong. Maybe they still like what they do, but I don't think it sounds like it. If Metallica were still doing what they like doing, they would have carried on with the Load and Reload era stuff and gone even softer and maybe put out...
Well, they are. They're going all acoustic, aren't they? There's an acoustic album coming, so you're not far off the actual truth. That's what's coming next. Is Metallica and MTV Unplugged.
What's with Metallica is, I guess we can all say like the first four stroke five albums is the golden era of Metallica.
Yeah.
In their live show, 80% of the live set is from those albums.
Yeah.
Surely that must rub off on them, or they must think there's something wrong here. Like, we're going to do two songs off the new album, whichever the new album is, you know, just saying whatever at the time. And then all of a sudden, da-dun, da-dun, bum, da-dun, 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 and the crowd just goes mental. It's like, surely you must. And how do they not write like that anymore? How are they no longer in that zone? That's what I don't understand. Because
they don't enjoy it anymore.
Yeah.
You can't write music for what you don't enjoy. Unless you're like a trained musician that can write anything. But like, if you're just like somebody like James Hetfield, who's, I understand, is a self-taught guitarist, it's not as if he's this virtuoso or that... Can write in any style of in any mood. So if you're not into it, you're going to hear it and you're going to struggle to write it. And that's how their latest album sound. It sounds plastic, man. They're trying to be all thrashy again, but it's terrible. Absolutely terrible.
It's like a Metallica pub cover band, isn't it? It's like one you're in the pub playing Metallica. Yeah. That's how I feel with them at the moment. It still sounds like them, but it's not quite them.
Yeah, yeah.
And something controversial that popped into my head is that I think Dave Mustaine was the most talented guitarist they ever had, and more talented than the current lineup. He's always had that flair for the musical notes, I think.
And that's the thing about Megadeth, is like when you listen to their later albums, it's still good music. It doesn't have that processed Metallica sound. I'm not speaking about the production, I'm speaking about the songwriting. You can hear that he's still enjoying writing this music. And I'm quite interested to hear the new album, because there was a short video clip that they uploaded, I think it was on Blabbermouth, and there was actually blast beats in the one song. It's like, fucking hell. Megadeth with blast beats.
Yeah, there's blast beats on the new album, apparently, yeah. The guy from Soilworks in there, isn't he?
Yeah.
Angry Dave is a good Dave. I think, and he's definitely got that fire back. And when he gets the fire back, Megadeth can be on form. And the last album was good, but I am expecting big things from the new stuff.
Yeah, I'm also expecting a bigger album with this next one. I've always liked Megadeth, but some albums I'd only like a few songs off of, but like the later albums, I've actually enjoyed all of them. I've actually really enjoyed it.
I really liked Dystopia and Endgame is another great album with
what's that album? Let me look it up quickly. I keep forgetting the fucking name. Let me look on my computer. Oh man, do I even have Megadeth on my computer anymore? The System Has Failed. Fuck, man, what an album. What an album. I love that album.
Give that one
up. Yeah, I think there's a lot of big things coming with them, and I'm glad, because there needs to be the bigger band to fill that void, in my opinion, because there is a big void. You've got Metallica, and then you've kind of got everybody else. I think, and we need a bridge, and rock festivals are suffering because there isn't as big a bands, and some of the shit that's on the festivals this year in the UK, the headliners, it's kind of been a big turn off on them. I haven't got the money for a lot of festivals this year, and even if I did, I'm not sure I'd be spending it. I'm getting a little bit samey fucking new shite, and I'm just not digging it, to be fair. So we need bands to be stepping up, and hopefully Megadeth can smash it out the park.
Yeah, but you got to face facts though, because the days of the Iron Maidens and Metallica's like stadium bands, those bands that are still doing it now, those are the last bands that are going to be doing it. It's just the way it is. The only band that I've seen that's gone from nothing to playing like arenas in a short span of time is Ghost. They've been doing very, very well for themselves, but they put on like a whole like show for everybody. It's like going and watching a King Diamond show. It's like a whole performance. It's not just listening to the music. A lot of people give me shit about it, but I love Ghost. I think they're awesome.
They've got a brilliant live show. I mean, their live show is up there with Alice Cooper, you know. But to me, they put out great singles, but I've never liked a full album. I know everyone sounds like someone, but they always just remind me of Blue Oyster Cult to the point I just want to listen to Blue Oyster Cult by the end of it. But they do have some great singles, for sure. Is it Clarice or Therese?
Yeah, that's a top track.
That's a great... That is undeniably a great song. And it's a great theme what they got. But at the beginning, it was kind of spooky, and there was that mystique about them. And now it's kind of become like a bit of a spoof of itself.
Yeah.
I'm not sure where they're going with that.
It's gone Spinal Tap. It's gone a little Spinal Tap for me, but they have got some great individual songs. I think you're right, but they have kind of gone, let's turn it to 11 with the campiness and stuff. But yeah, they have progressed really well. There's another thing that is worrying me, that like you've got bands like Greta Van Fleet who can basically rip off Led Zeppelin, and look at them now. They'll be playing bigger places and bigger places for basically copying off someone. You are right in a way. I think we've got to as musicians and people who listen to rock music is be a little bit more accepting of bands as well. We can be slightly snobbish, and that's why we're not getting bands going up as quick as we can, because the future of metal belongs to all of us, and we've got to make the effort to try and listen to new stuff. And it can be hard when you've listened to a certain genre, and I suffer from it.
I do kind of think though, like say we're going to organise a festival now, but instead of the three of us now put our money together and we're going to put on a festival. If we hire Slayer, let's say, if that festival fails, that's Slayer's fault. If the festival fails, then let's just say, like, we're going to give a load of new bands all a leg up. We're not going to put on anyone who's got more than two albums out. So it's going to be two albums, one album, and then just bands with demos. If that festival fails, that's our fault.
Yeah,
you know, and that's the thing as well. When someone's a lot of money goes through a festival, so that person organising that does have a lot of responsibility. And I know we can all moan about, you know, the money game and all the rest of it, but at the end of the day, that person's got to put in he's got to put in a lineup that's going to attract people. So when Metallica and Iron Maiden and all them do eventually retire, well, we say, well, who's going to step up? Well, someone's going to have to step up because those people can't rely on the Metallicas anymore.
They're eventually going to die out because they're going to get too old.
And it'll probably be Machine Head and Slipknot or, you know, bands like that and Ghost. All the bands that are on the second level will probably step up, but they're not going to give they're not going to give other big bands a chance if the risk isn't there, you know.
Yeah.
And that is just the way it is. What can you do, you know?
But speaking about festivals like that. I read that the Wacken Festival, because that's like one of the biggest festivals in the world. And
sells out a year in advance. Yeah.
Yeah, and I heard that they're in the red. Their next year is what covers them for the year that they're in. I don't know how true that is, but that's what I've read, and that's quite scary. Because fucking hell, it's such a big festival.
They've only got themselves to blame if that is the case. Because, like they say, that will sell out a year in advance before any acts are announced. And and Howard H from Talking Bollocks, that his podcast, he didn't say who, but he was speaking to a band off the record, and they were playing the main stage. And he said the fee they were given didn't even cover the flights there. And when they mentioned the fee and said, look, we're going to need, this doesn't even cover our costs, da 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 da, the answer was, do you want to play in front of 50,000 people or not?
Exactly.
So if that's how they're treating the bands and they're in the red, well, that's on their head, you know?
In South Africa, we had a thing called Witchfest. I think it happened for 2 years where it was pretty big. Not that many people, but they brought over like 10 or 12 international bands. It was quite a big thing, yeah. And the arranger, the guy who arranged it, he lost his house. It bankrupted him.
Fucking hell.
Yeah.
See, there's a big uproar over here with Bloodstock, which is traditionally a more heavier fucking festival. They've got Parkway Drive headlining the Saturday, the main night at their 3-day festival. I've been there and I've seen bands there and I've covered it for the show, but I can understand why they've got Parkway Drive on. I can't stand the music, it's total shite, but it's selling and people are going to the gigs and they've got to. That's the reason. They can't have heavy bands there all the time. They've got to make money. That's what the purpose of a festival is. We don't like the music, fine, but I understand they've got to get another, broaden their horizons and get them bands in, or they might as well shut up shop and basically go under like that guy did.
At the end of the day, arranging a festival, obviously, if you're starting the festival up fresh, you're doing it for the love of the music. But then later on, it becomes a business, and you've got to start making money. And if you're not making money, then what's the point of doing it? So these people that are complaining that and then these shitty bands like you said, Parkway Drive, that are headlining, they have to headline because they're the ones that bring in all the people to pay for the festival.
It's a different demographic nowadays as well, and bands and other musicians understand it, whereas the fans are a little less forgiving, and you'll always have the majority of the people who've been to the festival before will be bitching, saying, oh, I'm not going, I'm not doing this. You've got to weigh up, you know, do you still want this festival to continue, or do you want it to just go on its arse? And a lot of people will understand it if they actually take away the half from the head. But yeah, that's where we're at over here. A lot of the main rock festivals have bitched out to what could be said pop rock at times, and does I understand it. I don't agree with it. My heart hates it, but you've got to take it as it is.
As much as Parkway Drive, it's not as if, like, you know, it's not as if they're getting fucking Eminem to do, you know, that's what the Reading Festival did. And,
you know, and no one complained then. But last, I went to what's it called? Download once, and Feeder were the headliner.
But in a tent across the way, you had Napalm Death playing. I just went and watched Napalm Death. No one gave a shit. You know.
Yeah, I'll rather go to the small tents and watch the bands that I really enjoy.
Yeah, I had more fun at Bloodstock at the smaller tents too. There's more fun in there, and the bands will go out to try and outdo the headliners on the big stage as well. You'll get them put more effort in, I think.
And they probably will outdo the headliners anyway.
9 times out of 10, for me, that did happen. So yeah, you are right.
I'd much rather see a band like Immolation headlining Bloodstock, but if it doesn't make sense financially, then what's the point? So that's the shitty situation that we're in.
I fucking love Immolation. Did we have Ross Dolan on the show? I've interviewed him for something. I was on the phone to him, like I am with you, and he's so fucking down to earth and so funny. He's got that New York sense of humor. I've got stuff signed by him and everything. Oh, I love that band, and they're so good live, so fucking good live.
I know. Rob Vigne.
They would be so good on a. Imagine an Immolation with a real proper stage production as well, with all the dark imagery and the lights. That'd be so
awesome.
It's a shame they never got bigger. But with that, with Immolation, at least with them, because they never really got that big, they've never lost that hunger, and their albums are really consistent for it. They just get darker and heavier with every album. That last album they did was fucking phenomenal.
Yeah,
check it. I don't know how much of it stuff you've listened to, but yeah, the last album they did was amazing.
I've been listening to them from the beginning, from Dawn of Possession. Yeah, I've loved all the albums.
I like Majesty and Decay was another later day one.
Majesty and Decay is probably their last one that I really, really loved. I don't know what it is. I've had this discussion with a friend of mine. I know it sounds really stupid, but when they dropped their satanic lyrics, I think they lost something.
They dropped the what lyrics? Sorry,
the satanic lyrics or the anti-religious lyrics.
Yeah, it's certainly blasphemous.
When they dropped the blasphemous lyrics, to me, I think they lost something special there. As pretentious as that sounds, but because their music is so dark, the darker lyrics worked very well with the music as well. And taking that away, to me, I think it lost. I think it lost a bit of its magic. Don't get me wrong, I still love Immolation.
It's an interesting take, yeah. You know, it's one thing to think about. You used to write a lot of blasphemous lyrics yourself, didn't you? Because I remember when that first demo came out. I think you mentioned Satan in the lyrics or something. They went, Malevolent Creation never sang about Satan before, and everyone was going off.
Exactly.
Is that something you would bring into it in the further down the road, or is would Phil sort of put a stop to that, do you think?
No. Malevolent Creation has never been about spiritual stuff, so I would never even think of bringing it into the band. It's got no place.
But more of an anti-religious stance, with Immolation is more of an anti-religious stance rather than spiritual, isn't it? Like Morbid Angel, for example, would be spiritual, or Atsu, or something like that.
But you know what I mean. I would never try bring that into Malevolent Creation. There are some parts in one or two of the songs were referenced, something like that, but that's more about the victim crying out in agony. It's got nothing to do with the song being anti-religious. So I would never bring that into the band because the band has never been about that.
Your five favourite death metal albums?
Fuck, man, everybody always asks me this.
Do you know what? I was going to say this is a question that, and as soon as you hit someone with a question like this, they're like, off the top of my head, I can't fucking think of anything.
Man, okay, Deicide Legion has to be there.
That's a good
yeah,
pick.
Ten Commandments, that has to be there. Albums that I grew up with, but there's a band from Australia called The Amenta. Acastus was their first album. It's an untouchable album for me.
Spell that for me. I'm going to look it up. I've never heard of
Amenta. AMENTA.
See, this is why I ask this question, because you always discover something cool. And what's the first album called?
Acastus. I don't know how to spell it, man.
No, it's all right. I've got it. I've got it on Metal Archives, yeah. All right, I'll look that one up. Yeah, carry on.
Man. I wouldn't say... I can't say it's the best of all time because it's a newish album.
No, it's your favourite. That's all there is to it. Yeah.
Yeah, which is the Last Deeds of Flesh album, the Portals to Canaan. That was fucking amazing. I had that album on for about a year. That's all I listened to for about a year. It's such a good album. Man, I've got one more to choose from. I've always got one more to choose from, and then I never know what to choose. I'll leave that blank. there's too many to choose from.
Are you up for coming on to the show again and reviewing an album with us?
Definitely.
Because be awesome. I've had a really good chat. Gully, this is as good as guests.
Yeah,
as far
I really
as guests
fucking
on the
enjoyed
show
it,
again,
man.
You've been as good as... He was even early. That was another good... Yeah.
Yeah, I know. When a rock star's early, they're never fucking early.
did I
fuck us off?
To five, because like, we said five. Quarter to. I mean, he's already... He's ready to go. I mean, are you sure he's in a band?
it's been really fucking awesome speaking to you. I have to say, the fucking new album by Malevolent Creations, brutal as fuck, man. I am picky when it comes to death metal, and I really fucking enjoys it. I'm a picky bastard anyway, but thanks again for coming on, and people go and fucking buy the album. And that was it. That was the interview. Totally nice chap. He's going to come back. We're going to do a review with him. You know what? He's just a fan, and we always try and interview people like you would if you were sitting in a pub having a chat with them. We try and be informal as we are, because we're both approachable people anyway, and we try and keep it like that, because I hate that blunt questioning and all that shit. No, it's a conversation. We never come up with predetermined questions either. We have an idea what we're going to say, but we never write it down, because we just see how it flows and then go from there.
Yeah, I always
have
an idea of what I'm going to say or what I'm going to ask, but that's always three questions in. I forget. Unless I have them written down, but I find that to be really fucking lame. And
yeah, the worst interviews I've ever had is when I've actually planned what to say, and I've had to research, and then I've wrote loads of questions out, and they've always been shit. I've found, so try and keep it normal and keep it like just a few blokes having a pint in the pub. Nothing wrong with that. Have you got anything to plug?
Yes, the magazine is finally out. I had a notification
excellent.
The other day. I'm getting some copies shipped to me. I asked, can I get 10 more? And when I get them 10, I'll be selling them for the podcast. You can message us. When I've got them, I'll let you know. And yeah, you can, let's just say £5. £5 gets you a magazine, and that will link. That'll be the postage. I don't care about the money. I'll just
nice.
Ship them to you. So
fucking buy it then, listeners. Give us some money back. We spend money on this all day.
Yeah, and I guarantee you, folks, if you're a fan of Hate Eternal and Monstrosity, these are the best interviews you will read. Buy them. You've been listening to the podcast. You know I'm a fan. I was on the phone to both Eric Rutan, one of my musical heroes, and Lee Harrison, who's now one of my musical heroes as well. I didn't want to, you know.
Thoroughly nice bloke.
Yeah. And I fucking interviewed him twice. He was once on this show, and then I interviewed him again. And I even go through Monstrosity album by album with him. And not to beat my own chest, but I even got fucking Eric Rutan to choke up a little bit. You have to read to find out why. And yeah, I went in depth with both of them. You're not going to read a better interview on any of those fucking other publications where the fucking people that write for them are just bitches that want fucking likes on their Facebook and probably don't even fucking own the albums of the people they're interviewing. So yeah, Metal Legion, get it when it's out. Go on the website, like the page. And yeah, in April you got the Will to Kill reissue by Malevolent Creation, and that's out on Repulsive Echo Records, and you can pre-order that now. And when that's out, we'll go into that as well.
Yeah, so don't support these fake podcasts and these fake pricks anymore. Support real people who do real things, and support real metal. With that in mind, thanks very much for listening. This has been a fun episode. See you later.